Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now today I was reading some verses in Rupa Goswami's verse book. He has a verse book which is called the Padyavali, and he has collected verses from different places, and one verse was describing Krishna's flute, and he was describing how when Krishna plays his flute, that when all the cows hear the sound of Krishna's flute, they hear that the flute is calling them each by their individual name. So that for the gopis, the flute is playing a mantra which is dangerous to their heart. So in this way I started thinking about Krishna's flute playing, and I thought, alright, I'll begin speaking about that. It is said that the flute playing of Krishna is heard by Brahma, right? And that when Brahma is absorbed in the playing of Krishna's flute, in deep meditation, that then that sound of the flute comes out of Brahma's mouth in the form of the Gayatri Mantra. So, in this way, we can see how that spiritual sound is penetrating everywhere. Lord Shiva, it is said, plays a little din-din drum. It is a small drum he holds in one hand. He moves it up and down very quick, and there are chords with stones, and the stones hit the heads of the drum, so it makes a rattling sound. And he's jumping up and down playing that drum while Krishna is playing his flute. Like this, the flute playing of Krishna is heard all throughout the universe. Here, however, the flute playing of Krishna is coming to us in the form of mantra. Golokira Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. Also in the Harinam Sankirtan, all the wealth of the spiritual world is included, it is said. So therefore, as we are chanting, actually, it is our way of hearing Krishna's transcendental flute playing. The spiritual world, in other words, is not a casual or boring place. It's not a place where we just enjoy eternally after having behaved well. And then you get a reward and you'll go to heaven. And there you enjoy forever. It's not only that. It's more than that. It is a place where there is an intimate exchange with Krishna. Krishna is in the center of everyone's mind. There's a story written by Sanatan Goswami in his book called Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And it describes about Gopakumar. And Gopakumar was a cowherd boy from Vrindavan. He actually was from the site of Govardhan. That's where he belonged. And then Gopakumar, he one day met this devotee who gave him a mantra and who told him that on the strength of this mantra you will attain everything. So then Gopakumar went for a journey, and he went searching out the ultimate goal, Meanwhile, he was chanting his mantra. And by the chanting of his mantra, he attained various destinations. It is said, eventually, Gopu Kumar started to travel to higher planets in the universe. At one point, Gopu Kumar got the position of Lord Brahma himself. At that time, there was an assembly of all the Vedas personified. The Vedas have, each of them have deities, and each Vedic literature, there are many, they have a deity personified. So all these personalities came in an assembly before Brahma, and they had a big discussion as to who was meant to preside over the whole assembly. And some thought, it's the Upanishads, and they spoke very loud, and the Upanishads claimed the position of supremacy. But some Puranas and some other scriptures, which were more confidential, became very dissatisfied with this, and in protest, they left the assembly. So when they left, they were quite respected, so it was a drama, you know, when some respected people walk out, then what do you do? So Gopu Kumar went after them and pacified them. No, please come back. And then they came back. And then they chose the Bhagavad Purana, also known as Srimad Bhagavatam, to speak. So these Puranas, including Srimad Bhagavatam, had come back, and Bhagavatam now spoke. And Bhagavatam established that the Upanishads are only giving part of the truth. They give us the truth about Brahman, but that is incomplete. It said, Vadanti tat tattavidat tatvam gyat jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti sabjate in Srimad Bhagavatam, that the absolute truth, the undivided absolute truth, consists of three parts: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, or the spiritual energy on which everything rests, that one energy which is the source of everything that is manifest in this world. That energy is also known as the Brahma Jyoti. The Brahma Jyoti, it is said in the Isopanishad, which is a confidential Upanishad, it says, Hiranmayena patrena satyasyapitam mukhan tattvam pusana pavrino satya dharmaya drishyate. It is said there that remove this Brahma Jyoti, this golden effulgence, remove it. This golden effulgence which is emanating from you, please remove it and show your face which is behind this effulgence. So in this way, it is understood that Brahman is the effulgence of Krishna, or the energy of Krishna. Krishna is also present as Paramatma within the heart of every living being, and Krishna is present in his personal form when he plays his flute. And this flute playing is so, you've never heard anything like that. You know, I mean, everyone's heard flute playing, peep, peep, and so on. But not like that, you know. Real flute playing, right? In such a way that everyone feels touched in a personal way. When the gopis hear that flute, they hear that no one has love for me as you have. Therefore, you must abandon everything and come to me. That is what the gopis are hearing. Srimati Radharani again hears something else. She hears, you are the only one. So in this way, everything hears a different message in Krishna's flute. We cannot hear Krishna's flute directly, but we hear Krishna's flute through mantras. We hear it through the scripture. Gopu Kumar was there on that planet of Lord Brahma, But there also he was not satisfied, although it was better than planet Earth. He was still not satisfied. He wanted more. And one day a great personality appeared. And it was Sanat Kumar. Sanat Kumar is one of the four Kumaras. These four Kumaras are sons of Brahma. And it is said that they were created by Brahma. And Brahma had a desire that they would get involved in populating the universe. But they were not very interested, and therefore they decided not to grow up. They decided to remain 5 years old. It's much better when you're 5 years old, they thought, because when you're 5 years old, you have no responsibility. You can do anything you like. You're too young even to go to school. So when you're 5 years old, said, as soon as you get older than 5 years, you thought, then responsibility starts. Right? Then you have to do things and so on. He said, no. The four Kumaras decided, we stay 5 years old. And when you're 5 years old, you can go wherever you like. Nobody will stop you. Even if you walk into someone's house, they'll say, oh, how nice, come in, you know. When you're 5 years old, you walk in a stranger's house and you point at, like, I want that banana. Oh, they say, oh, yes, take the banana. You want strawberries as well? He said, yeah, yes. And cream? Yes. And then you can go to the next house and then do the same thing. So, 5 years old, they were very intelligent, the four Kumaras, to stay 5 years old. Of course, they were also powerful yogis. Ordinary people can't do it. So, Sanat Kumar is not an ordinary powerful yogi. He is actually described as a Shakti Avesh avatar, or an empowered incarnation of Krishna. Therefore, Sanat Kumar has also another feature of himself which resides eternally in Vaikuntha. So once Gopa Kumar met our Sanat Kumar, he became so inspired, he just chanted his mantra and he followed him, and he went to Vaikuntha. And when he came to Vaikuntha, it was wonderful because in Vaikuntha, everyone had four arms, everyone had a spiritual body. No one was undergoing the experiences of a material body. Fatigue, a pain here, a pain there, nothing like that. Just full of fresh energy. All the residents of Vaikuntha are ever fresh. The residents of Vaikuntha are very powerful. They have mystic power and they can take on many forms at the same time. They need not just be there in their forearms, no. Some of them can also take the form of sages. Some of them even take the form of animals to play with Narayan. In that way, all for the pleasure of Narayan, those who have spiritual bodies in Vaikuntha are experiencing great enjoyment and they always worship Narayan. So it is interesting that the devotee gets the same benefit as the Lord himself. Not God and then the living being just being deprived. No. They get the same kind of body as the Supreme Lord, the same kind of spiritual opulence in Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha where there's no anxiety. In this way, Gopa Kumar was very happy. But at the same time, in this Vaikuntha, everyone was worshipping Lord Narayan and always speaking about the qualities of the Supreme Lord. And everyone was worshipping him with great respect and always remembering the unlimited energies of the Lord, the unlimited powers of the Lord, all the opulences of the Lord. And Gopa Kumar, deep down in his heart, felt something was missing. He was remembering Govardhan. At Govardhan, after all, he was from Govardhan. He was a simple coward boy. And actually, there, everyone is just remembering Krishna. and simply most attached to him. So Gopakumara felt something lacking. So after a long, long journey, there are other planets in between, which I now will skip, because although if we go the whole journey, then it will get late. So at one point, Gopakumara comes back to Vrindavan, Golok Vrindavan, the spiritual world. And he comes there into this land, and Gopakumara says, he meets some old person on the road. It seems that no one is there. Somehow or other he is looking. He sees that all the trees, the branches of the trees, are all pointing in the same direction. Very strange, you know? I mean, it's an unusual landscape. Huh? Normally branches grow in all directions. You know, like hair, you know, grows in all directions. Branches grow in all directions. But in this land, all the branches of the trees were just growing in one direction. He's thinking, it's a strange place. What is this? Finally, he saw someone, an old lady. He said, "Who is the king? Who is the king of this land?" He said, "Oh, Nanda Maharaj is the king of this land. It's Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj, the father of Krishna." So he said, very nice. And then he said, "Why are all the branches pointing in one direction in this country?" It said, "In the morning, Krishna goes to the forest, and all the branches are pointing in the direction that Krishna has gone." Like that. Yes. So the trees are all just thinking of Krishna. Everyone is thinking of Krishna. Yes. All the people are just looking in that direction where Krishna went. Madhya Yasoda's palace. This is a nice palace, beautiful columns, lapis lazuli columns, beautiful onyx seats, and a wonderful waterfall is around the garden wall. It's a wall around the garden, and a waterfall is coming off. And there is one high tower in that palace. And on that tower, Madhya Yasoda has stated, has posted, the tallest gopi. She's extra tall, so she's in that tower and she's on the lookout post. You know? And all day she's just looking to see if Krishna is coming back. Right? And finally, in the evening, there comes the magic word. Dust! Dust! Dust. Yes, it is dust thrown up by the hoofprints of Krishna's calves. And everybody wakes up. Everyone has just been waiting. Suddenly everyone comes to life and everyone gets enthusiastic and everyone gets eager and everyone gets ready to go to the edge of the forest. Yes, the elders in front. The gopis are, of course, they cannot show openly that they love Krishna so much, so they hide it a little bit. So they stand casual behind the pillars, looking. The birds are flying in the sky. The monkeys are ready. Squirrels are there. And then Krishna comes, right? And all eyes, every eye is on Krishna. The eyes of all the calves are on Krishna. The squirrels right in front of Krishna, looking at Krishna. The monkey hanging on one hand on a branch is looking at Krishna. Yes, the elders are smiling at Krishna. Oh, our boy. And the gopis are looking at Krishna. And Krishna, from the corner of his eyes, is looking at those gopis. Yes, and Krishna in this way returns home after a day in the forest. Just then, Gopakumara arrived. Yes, he was back in Vrindavan, back in the spiritual world. Now he had a spiritual name, named Swarup. Sarup. Sarup was back in the spiritual world. Krishna saw him, and Krishna calls out, "Sarup!" And And Krishna just fainted. The gopis are going, must be an agent of Kamsa. You know, some demon who has come here, you know. And they were getting heavy, right? And they're ready to take action. But Balaram said, no, it's okay. He's a dear friend of Krishna. Krishna hasn't seen him for a long time, and that's why he fainted. Sarup, chant in Krishna's ear. So Sarup starts to, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare. Krishna wakes up, oh, Sarup, you are back. You must come with me to my home, yes, and take lunch with me, or dinner, it was dinner, take dinner with me. Anyway, so they're coming, he comes to the house, and then, you know, Radharani is a great cook. She has all the blessings that she can cook, only nectar. Whatever she makes, it's nectar. And she never cooks the same prep twice, so it's not boring, you know. And what are we having today? The specialty. Oh, the same specialty from last week. It's okay. No, it's always new, something you never had, and it's nectar. So everyone's excited when she cooks. And also, when you eat it, everybody who eats what she cooks stays always fresh and young. So, not bad, you know. So, okay, everyone's ready. So she cooked, yeah. So, then, serving out the meal. And then, they put, Mother Yasoda is serving, and she puts a whole bunch of sweets on Krishna's plate. Cooked by Radharani. Really nice sweets. And Krishna takes a bite. And he goes like, oh, like, and he makes a real sour face. So everyone is shocked. You know, like, I mean, what is this, you know? I mean, did she put salt instead of sugar or what, you know? What did she do, right? And then Krishna takes this sweet and is like, ugh, here, you take. He puts on Sarup's plate. And Sarup is tasting one, and they taste like nectar. And in this way, he gets all the remnants of Krishna's plate, and he eats them. And because Sarup is actually, turns out, a relative of Radharani somewhere in that family. So in this way, Radharani also understands what's going on, but some are still looking like, what did she do wrong, you know? But she's okay with it. So in this way, it is described how Sarup has come back home, back to the spiritual world. So it's a very nice story, because most stories in the Bhagavatam, they end with that the devotee was a pure devotee, and then he went back to Godhead. And that's the end. You know, the lion comes on the screen and roars. And all the lions. then it's over, right? And it's over. Yeah. But in this case, no. You know, it goes on. He arrives in the spiritual world. Mm. So the Beard Bhagavatamrita gives us a whole description of the spiritual world, what goes on there afterwards. I want to, after sketching this spiritual world, it's important for us to know about the spiritual world, but at the same time, we can't enter into the spiritual world. We're not really there. We can think about it. It sounds nice. It does sound nice. It sounds like fun, kind of. It sounds like something you could do forever, right? Because, if you have to do something forever, there must be some fun. Otherwise, you know, how long can we do it? If in the spiritual world everything is a little dry and you think, oh God, you know, what are we going to do today? Yeah, we're going to go to the forest. Oh no, not again to the forest. I know what we're going to do. We're going to take the calves to the forest, isn't it? Okay, calves and cows, yes. Boo! Is anything else going to happen ever, or is it every day? the same, you know, the same thing. Yeah, it's full of variety and exciting.
Mm.
So that is sounds attractive. Yes, Krishna sounds attractive. We were in Amsterdam, and yes, we do Harinam in the city of Amsterdam, and we start always in a famous place. There's a tower called the Munt, and that's where we start, you know, and then we go do a circle and get to that place. So this time, there was a street artist, and the street artist had drawn with chalk a picture of God on the street. Yeah? It was a copy of a painting of Michelangelo, and if you know the painting, yeah, then you know that there is a God sitting on the cloud, and he looks like this. He's an old man with a beard, and he looks very heavy, and you know, you don't want to mess with him, right? That's for sure, you know. Anyway, no, it's God, you know. But he's like the one that punishes. So he's an old man, and of course, you know, when you're old, you wake up with rheumatism, and it's at a mean morning, you know, and you think, like, and the first sinner that I see today gets a thunderbolt on his head, you know. So, you know, we were going on the Harinam, and as we're going through the street, suddenly from a window up there, you know, we're chanting Hare Krishna, suddenly the seat of a toilet was flying out the window towards our Harinam party. So we ducked, and it went over our heads, and it hit somebody else. Anyway, we didn't wait to see what was going to follow next, you know, considering that next the rest might follow. So we moved very fast from there. Anyway, we were chanting and singing, and some people danced. And then, as we're going on, one man comes up to us, and he comes in front of us, and he just spit on the ground in front of us. And we go, like, boy, it's a hell of a day. You know, toilet seats, and people spitting in front of us. It really gets a bit much, you know. And I was just thinking about it anyway, just go on. And then we came at the end, and we came back to that picture of God. And I was thinking, No wonder people spit in front of us. No wonder they throw things at us. Because they think we're representing that punishing God. You know, they see God as like is there to punish everyone. And that's why they don't want to have anything to do with religion. And they think he's an old man because God is the original person. He was first. Everything emanates from him. So he has to be old. Yes, Krishna is old, but at the same time, young. Why would you be old? I tell you one thing, take it from me, it's no fun to be old. Ask anybody, you know. Why? Because when you're old, you go like, and when you're young, you just jump up, you know. You know. When you're young, say, yes, bring more ice cream. When you're old, say, no, that's all right. I'll take one biscuit. You know? That's about all you can handle. You know? So it's no fun. So yes, Krishna is young. He's ever fresh. You know, in South India, there was an avatar who... Well, reminded me of Jimi Hendrix, anyway, he claimed that he was God. And it is said that in the scriptures, it is said that the avatars of God are representing the different, some quality of God. So like, for example, Vamana Dev is described, and he is described as representing the beauty of God. So if that person in South India was an incarnation, I wonder what quality he was representing. Beauty it was not. Anyway, leaving something aside, the point is that Krishna has all divine qualities. If something tastes really nice, we say, it's divine. It tastes divine. Yeah. It's like that. All Krishna's qualities are divine. If we look at Krishna's, it makes sense. Maybe not from the empiric point of view, from the point of modern science. How can you prove that God exists? What evidence do you have? That's not an argument. But we can say, look, he makes sense. He has wonderful pastimes that are very attractive. He looks very attractive. He acts in a very noble and merciful way. So he shows a very noble character also. He's wise, merciful, like that. So the more we find out about Krishna, we see consistently qualities that we can appreciate. Like, since I'm in Australia, I'll do a little bit of a drama. You know, you might appreciate it. Oh no, goes a chuda. Anyway, I just heard that he's a muy buen devoto y también y muy loco también. So anyway, the story is about Kaliya. One day, Krishna and his cowherd boyfriends went to the Yamuna with their cows, and where the cows would drink water. There was a lost calf. Krishna went looking for that lost calf and left the cowherd boys alone. They came to the river and they all drank the water, and there was a big poisonous snake that had entered into that river, and all the water had become poisoned, and as a result, when they drank the water, they all died. So it was a big drama. Krishna came back and he found all his friends and cows dead. Anyway, he revived them all. And next moment he jumped into the river. And as soon as he was in the river, the water, as he reached the water, the water came up half a meter, like that. Although, so that showed something. Then he started making musical sounds with the water. Like that, to indicate what was coming. He was going to dance. That serpent came out of the water from nowhere, tried to grab Krishna. Eventually Krishna danced on his hoods, and by that the snake got quite a headache, and eventually so bad, even a concussion, and was ready to give up his life, when the wives of the snake quickly appeared before Krishna. Please, don't kill our husband. Please. They offered prayers. So what could Krishna do? You know, what do you do when the women start crying? And, you know, I mean, you know, Krishna's a softie. So what could he do, you know? So he said, so then he had to let that snake live. Now, if I would have been in his place, you know, I would have said, now listen, you snake. Okay, I'll let you live this time, right? Okay, just because your wives were crying, right? I'll let you get off. But otherwise, you know, I mean, you got to understand one thing. If you ever show your snaky face again in this part of town, you're finished. You got it? And I would have pulled out my two guns, right? And I would have said, and now you dance, 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 you snake, dance, dance. And that snake would have danced all the way, right? And from a distance, he would have shaken his fist. And he would have said, get your back, Swami. I'll get your back. That's how I would have dealt with him, probably. Krishna is more intelligent. So Krishna said, my dear king of the snakes. So the snake sort of felt good. Oh, he knows I'm a king. Oh. My dear king of the snakes, you have come to the Yamuna, you have poisoned all the waters. That is not possible. You can't stay here. You'll have to return to the place where you came from, the island Ramanaka, which nowadays is known as Fiji. Right? So you can go back to Fiji, right, and stay there. And I know why you left Fiji. You were afraid of Garuda. Because Garuda eats snakes. But now you don't have to worry, because my footprints are on your head and Garuda will not touch you. So you can go back and stay peacefully in Fiji. And believe it or not, that snake Kaliya is still there today. Anyway, Krishna satisfied him. Krishna didn't leave him with nothing, right? So Krishna shows us that in dealing even with enemies, right, one must make sure that they're also satisfied. That every living being must be satisfied. So that is a noble quality. Not just like me satisfied and you out of the way. No. Everyone satisfied. Krishna is the well-wisher of all living beings. Suridam sarvadehinam, says in Bhagavad Gita. So in this way we can see that not only the looks of Krishna, not only the pastimes of Krishna, but also the nature of Krishna is actually very nice. I vote for that God. Okay? I don't vote for the one on the cloud. I'm sorry. I'm not voting for him. I vote for the attractive God, for the God. It makes sense. So the more we hear about Krishna, the more we naturally begin to see, yes, this makes sense to my heart. It may not make sense to my empiric brain. How can I measure it? How can I prove it? You know, what is the evidence that God exists? You know, what is the evidence that God doesn't exist? Well, we were in Germany just now, and Ravindra Sarup, who is academically highly educated, PhD and all these things, he said, whenever an atheist tells me that he doesn't believe in God, he said, I ask him, what God are you not believing in? And he said, and then they give a description of God, and then he says, and then when they're finished, he says, I don't believe in that God either. It's not bad, not bad. I thought that had something. I myself, sometimes, when someone says, I don't believe in God, then I congratulate them. And I was like, I'm so happy to meet you. I'm just so happy to meet you. It is just so rare to meet someone with so much faith, you know? Someone who really believes. I mean, how can you be so sure, you know? Everyone else is like, I don't know if there is a God or not, you know? And you say, no, I you really know that there is no God. Congratulations. I never met such a believer like you. They don't like that. So, there are different ways. So, atheism is one thing. But Falena parichiyate. There are so many philosophies. One person believe this, I believe that. That's all right, but one must look. What is the result? What is the result? What is the result if you are a Hell's Angel? No, if you have that out. What is the result? Anxiety. So we must judge by the result. So the devotees of Krishna become fearless. They become fearless. They become detached from this world. They understand there's more. But they can also see everything in this world, we can use it for Krishna. And then suddenly it becomes nice and meaningful. In this way, for example, you know, we have prasadam. And prasadam is something very good because it is made with devotion. It's not just slapped together, you know, pull something from the deep freezer and chuck it in the microwave and, you know, bing, dinner. Okay. I'll have it later. Yeah, no worries. We'll chuck it in the microwave again. That's one way. No, prasadam is prepared with devotion. So that makes it different. But that's not everything. Prasadam is offered to Krishna. And that's not everything. We know that while we're taking prasadam, it tastes nice, but we also know that at the same time, we're getting spiritual benefit. So with every bite, we're making spiritual advancement. So in this way, even when we are in this world, everything gets better. Because everything we do in devotional service gets a spiritual dimension. And in this way, you can run a Govinda Valley retreat, and it's all transcendental. You can run a Cronulla Cafe, you know, and it's all transcendental. Because whatever you do it for Krishna. And if it gets that spiritual dimension, which makes everything okay. Even if the prasadam would not taste good sometimes, still you get spiritual benefit. Even if devotional service is not inspiring, the spiritual dimension is always there. And therefore the quality of life in devotional service improves in this life and then increasingly so until the next, when we also come back to the spiritual world and when Krishna will also be very happy to see any of us like that. So I've tried to go from the spiritual world down to the material world and back up to the spiritual world, and in the course of that sort of start a little meditation on the goal, the ultimate goal. It may be far away now. Maybe now we just want some a spiritual dimension in our life. But the day will come. The day will come that we'll really desire to be with Krishna. Because there's no one more attractive than Krishna. No one. Okay, any questions or comments?
When we're practicing devotional service, we do forget the goal. So what are those things that make us, I guess, discouraged in Krishna consciousness and forgetting the goal? What are those things that we can watch out for?
Well, you know, first of all, we are, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we bring a little suitcase. We have a little suitcase, and in that little suitcase, we have some unwanted things. Yeah? And that's the difficulty. We bring a lot of, we're bringing too much hand luggage. No? There it begins. Qualities such as greed. I want everything I want. More, more, more. Is very strong in us. Even when you don't have money, you go in Singapore into the most expensive shop looking at the most expensive watches. But the guy in the shop got you figured out and says, do you have any money? So, all of us are still influenced by some greed. It's not just gone, you know. It doesn't matter. We can walk into a devotional community, but greed remains. Still there's anger. Right, that just controls us. Still, there's envy. Still, we're looking at someone and think, this person is strange. Yeah? That's very deep. We're not a well-wisher of everyone. So that we bring with us. So these are the first obstacles. Lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. Kama, krodha, moha, lobha, matsarya. Then the desire. You see, this is the world where we can be because we want to be worshipped. Not God. I am God. I am the center of the attention. That's very deep in us, this tendency to be in the center of the attention, to be adored, somehow or other find someone how great we are. Yeah? So that tendency is another obstacle. And we have to counteract that by taking a humble position, not taking credit, saying, no, it wasn't due to any of my abilities, somehow or other. It was more luck, you know, than anything else. And this way, by taking a humble position, not taking praise, giving praise to others, you know. It's not that Govinda Valley is running so well because I'm here, you know. It's I'm here. I'm the only one that can do anything in this place. If I wasn't here, the whole place would fall apart. You're a useless bunch, okay? Just that you know what I mean? And when are you guys getting your act together, you know? You're lucky, you know? You're lucky that you're getting a chance to work with me and maybe something will rub off on you, you know? Although I have little hope for guys like you. No. It's more like, no, actually, you know, I haven't really done much, but it's because of all of you that this place works, you know. It's amazing that how what you're all doing. I don't know how you do it, but it's amazing how, because of your contributions, things are really going well. So in this way, one can practice this, giving credit to others, not taking credit himself. Gradually we can overcome these internal enemies that block us. Well, in that way, we can gradually, when we're becoming free from lust, greed, anger, false pride, envy, and so on, then one day Krishna becomes much closer. But as long as we are caught up in these things, Krishna is still far away. As long as we're controlled by lust, greed, anger, envy, Krishna is far away. Seems unreal. Seems like a fairy tale. So it takes purity. And the more pure we become, the more real Krishna becomes to us emotionally. The more we can actually emotionally accept him. And the more we can start to perceive him. See, now we have emotional resistance because of these qualities, lust, greed, anger, madness, and illusion. Illusion is that we think, yeah, Krishna's okay, but we think maybe there's something more. I mean, I like stories about Krishna, but maybe there's more also. Maybe it's not everything. No, it's nice, Krishna. I really like it. But maybe there's also other things. Like that. That's illusion. So it's hard, because we all think that there are other things, isn't it? Yeah? So we can see we're affected by this thing. It goes very deep. And that's why when I speak about Krishna in Vrindavan and so on, it sounds like a fairy tale. Not real. That's our problem.